and talk about Ban the Box. So would you read item 539, please?
Adopt administrative rules for Chapter 23.10, removing barriers to employment, and authorize the city attorney to enter into an intergovernmental agreement with the Bureau of Labor and Industry at an amount not to exceed $25,000.
So Rachel Wiggins and Judy Prosper, who are the keepers of this flame in our work on Ban the Box, are here, and we appreciate your good work and here to walk us through the proposed rules.
Good morning, council members, Mayor Hales. I am Judy Prosper, deputy city attorney, and here with Rachel Wiggins, as you state. Before I start, so I don't forget, I do want to thank two colleagues who also helped get these administrative rules written. That's Denise Vanier and Lynn Vu. I think she's in the room. So we're here today with the administrative rules. There was a review period per the ordinance, which took place between April 11th and May 2. We received very few comments during that time, but did continue to receive some comments after that. And as a result of that, we would like to, before we start, we have two amendments proposed. One is the definition of a volunteer, which came up in some of our conversations with our HR partners. And then, because we are imperfect, another little Scrivener's error in Exhibit A on the criminal history matrix as shown. So as I go through, we'll bear in mind that those things hopefully will become a part of.
Okay. Do we have a written version of those amendments? Or
they were circulated with offices. You should have one in your book.
They show up as a memo. Oh, there they are. I see them. Sorry.
Yeah, dated May 24th.
Yeah, there we go. All right. Okay, so why not at the outset, before we start, I'll move the amendments.
Second.
And then let's accept the amendments and then move on and do your presentation. So roll call to accept the amendments, please.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Hale.
Aye. Okay.
Okay, so I'm going to be brief today. I just want to point out a few things. The rules are there, and they're drafted with definitions, and there's a couple of exhibits, the criminal history matrix, which is a two-pager, and a sample letter of rescission of conditional offer of employment. So I just want to point out a few things. The first is the timing. The city of Portland decided to go further than the state law with the timing of when employers could inquire into an applicant's criminal history. The state says it can happen at the interview phase. We've moved in Portland to the conditional offer of employment. That's the standard, conditional offer of employment. As the rules state, your average hire, the nature test that's found in 2310030, the nature and gravity of the criminal offense, the time that has elapsed, and the nature of the employment held or sought is going to be the standard timing for most hires. If you fall under an exception, 23-10.040, either an outright exception, as I call them, you're a state or federal local law, and there's a corresponding rule that requires consideration, you're a law enforcement agency, the criminal justice system, or an employer seeking a non-employee volunteer, the terms of the code don't apply to you. The provisions of the code, pardon me. If you do fall under an exception under B, that's capital B, there is a criminal history matrix that can guide you in making your decision. The criminal history matrix is not a bar. The criminal history matrix is a guide. It is a way that you can look, something you can look to say, okay, if the crime falls in this category, I do not have to hire the person, and I would not violate. I also don't have to do a nature test for those convictions. So if we go through the rules, to clarify a little bit. Thank you, Rachel.
Mm-hmm.
There we go. So under rules, what we're calling RB for removing barriers to employment, 2.04, There's number four talks about sensitive positions, and there are a few categories of sensitive positions. Positions having direct access or the provision of services to children, the elderly, and persons with disabilities. That is the most protected class of folks, and you'll go to the matrix and you'll see under categories if you go to the matrix for those provisions of those kinds of services, you'll get that you have to look at A, B, and any sex crimes or their equivalent. If you move down to a category C, which is positions with folks who are in drug or alcohol treatment or substance abuse, there's sort of a lesser, I wouldn't say lesser standard, but it is understood that these kinds of rehab and care, sometimes the best person to help someone in rehab is someone who's been through rehab, and they may have a criminal history that's related to that. So that's why the matrix is not as strict, so to speak, for those categories. All other convictions will have to go through the nature test. If it's not on the matrix, it needs to go through nature. We have the volunteer definition. Another thing that I would like to point out is the code authorized the city attorney to enter into a contract with Boley and decide on additional penalties. What's in there now is the Boley, any remedies by Boley, and then a $5,000 penalty per occurrence that goes to the city. We came up with that number because there were some comments, I think one came from Commissioner Novick at one point, that said if the fine is too low, it won't have very much of a deterrent effect. So we decided on that number. The contract with Boley is, we're working out the last tweaks. It will be less than we think the sick leave, so we have it at a not to exceed $25,000. There's no counting. There's a whole lot less, and this kind of civil rights case is something that Boley is much more familiar with doing. So we'll get that contract signed and ready to be enforced as of July 1. And the last thing I'd like to say is we are preparing some trainings. Once we know exactly what the final rules are, after you've given us your approval, we are going to have some trainings for our internal HR partners and all folks in the city of Portland who do any hiring. Then we will present to the private sector. We already have someone who is willing to host one of our private sector partners. And then we'll do a training or two for the advocates as well. So,
Judy, I have a couple of questions.
Please.
And thank you for the clarity of your presentation. I think I got all that. One of the things I think we're all aware of is that there's going to be a transition period where folks figure out what they're required to do. And I think particularly for the businesses that are covered but are still small and smaller in size, it will require some education and some practice. And so, you know, the general view is you don't bring the hammer down early. You do the education and the phase in, and then you give people a chance to get to do it the right way. And then if there's problems, you bring the hammer down. So my first question is, what are the transition rules here in terms of is there a period of time in which we're explicitly less likely to use an enforcement tool versus an education tool? That's question number one. And the second question is, and I'm looking at a letter we got from the Portland Business Alliance. That's how I got this issue was flagged. Why are we proposing to increase the penalty scheme at Boley to include a $5,000 fine? What's the logic behind that?
Okay, so thanks for those questions. Enforcement versus education. We are contracting with Boley to do the enforcement. Right now, the way the contract is written, and as I said, we're still working out the final tweaks, there is no sort of gap transitional period. It is enforceable as of July 1st. If that's something you're suggesting, we can definitely look at that and come back, and I can come back and talk to you about what kinds of timing you'd like to see, because, again, I think it's a substantially similar. So if that, I think that's something that would be substantially similar to this contract if you wanted to suggest a transition period, like let's say from July 1st to 30, 60, or 90 days out, We will not enforce penalties, but there will be more education or letters. I definitely think that's something we can entertain.
I don't know how Boley balances that, because on the one hand, you don't want to give people, the bad actors, a pass, that people just say, oh, I got a safe harbor, and I'm gonna discriminate like crazy, versus giving Boley the discretion to treat offenses within the first, during the ramp-up period, differently than later. Because what ultimately, we're not going to win this battle by enforcing. We're going to win this battle by educating and getting people to do the right thing, because, you know, Boley could hire 1,000 people and do enforcement all the time. The secret is to get everyone to voluntarily agree to do the right thing. So I don't know how, what their experience has been. You don't want to create a period where we encourage the bad actors to get a pass. On the other hand, I think you want to have a phase in where people are more likely to get a remedial action rather than a fine for not doing it correctly, where there's a showing that they acted, where they otherwise acted in good faith. But the $5,000 penalty, I'm not aware that the council indicated we wanted to enhance the existing enforcement scheme. So, again, why do we think bumping it up to $5,000 in this one case is appropriate?
I'll tell you from where that came. I'm looking at this. I forgot my copy, so I have to look at it online. So under the enforcement provision 2310.060, the paragraph D talks about, you know, Boley having enforcement powers and we're enforcing them, and it says that we can, and this is, you all will decide today, the complaint may be entitled to any remedies provided under ORS 659A 820 through 865 and their implementing regulations, and any additional remedies provided that those remedies are specified in the agreement between the city and the Boley commissioner. So there was some discretion, or when you sent these rules off to the city attorney's office to be crafted, there was some sort of open discussion about whether or not there should be additional penalties. In looking at other jurisdictions, in looking taking into consideration Commissioner Novick's comments about if the fine or penalty is too small, it may not have the deterrent effect, we came up with this amount. If it's not an amount that you're comfortable with, or you think it's too penal, that's definitely something that we can adjust.
So I could argue either side of this, mm-hmm. and this used to be an area where I practiced law. Here's a thought. I'm not comfortable changing the penalty scheme yet, because I don't have any evidence that we're getting compliance or non-compliance. And I think that, so in other words, I can't evaluate this. This might be too low. If you come back and say we have the kind of compliance rate that we're seeing with Airbnb, for example, I'm exaggerating, but I'm disinclined to set an arbitrary cap or floor on an additional civil penalty until I understand whether Boley and the oversight body believe that people are getting the message and doing the right thing. It's up to, but it's in addition. It ends up being an additional penalty that was not originally prescribed. And I would feel more comfortable setting that at such time when we get a report on how we're doing with enforcement, rather than just putting a number in.
Okay.
I don't think the case has been made that we needed the additional stick until we've had maybe year one experience with how is this working. And then again, as I say, $5,000 may be too low if people are just willfully disregarding it. But I don't have a basis to evaluate it, and I don't know that was part of the conversation that we were going to increase the penalty.
Okay. Other questions, thoughts?
Well, speaking of a phase-in period, I think that makes sense. I mean, mm-hmm. we did that with paid sick leave as well, so I don't know what the right period, but. I'll throw out 60 days. That seems like an appropriate phase-in period.
I just want to clarify. Is that something you would like us to negotiate in the contract, that there will be none? Or, as Commissioner Fish mentioned, just as we speak to Boley about how we would like this to be enforced and going forward, because we will be doing our education piece together with Boley since they'll be enforcing it, we want to sort of have the spirit of I want to have a clarification from council whether you want it to be a contract provision or whether you would like it to be sort of in the spirit of not bringing down the hammer on the first day, we're going to allow you to have this discretion.
What did we do with paid sick leave in that situation? Do you know?
I don't know, sir, but I can get back to you. I wish my colleague,
personally,
Denis, was here.
Judy, I'm agnostic on the question of whether we do it by informal agreement with Boley or not. I think Boley has a lot of experience rolling out new rules.
Yeah.
And my guess is that they generally err on the side of wanting to do a rollout with education and outreach before they have to do enforcement, because enforcement is very time-consuming. Enforcement is expensive, and it's very discrete remedies. And what you're doing, you're focusing initially on making sure the largest number of people follow the law.
And in the Boley, I'm sorry, go ahead, Commissioner.
Well, I was just going to comment on paid sick leave that it was a collaborative relationship with Boley, and we jointly came to and then put on the website that there was going to be a six-month kind of safe harbor of education. And in response to Commissioner Fish's concern about the number, since it says up to 5,000, our experience with Boley with sick time was that most of the time a stern letter saying you're not complying and you need to has been adequate to bring people into compliance. So they certainly under Labor Commissioner Avakian, there's a willingness to work with companies and encourage them to do the right thing before bringing down the hammer. So I'm not sure that we have to have it in the contract, because that's their mode of operating.
But I think there's a common ground here, which is I don't think anyone disagrees that we ought to make sure that this is, one, collaborative with Boley, two, informative to the to every employer, and three, that penalties don't start happening until there has really been adequate notice and the opportunity for people to get educated. I think all that's possible in our agreement with Boley, both the formal and informal parts of it, but not having any penalty prescribed in our ordinance makes it a little bit toothless, or might appear to be.
But this is in addition to the remedies they have. They have up to five mayors in addition to the remedies they already have.
Right.
So it is not, the existing rule is not toothless. This is an additional remedy.
Oh, fair enough. That is additional. There are other penalties still there.
There are other penalties.
And my sense, and again, I used to be in the position of urging administrative bodies to, if it said up to 5,000, I was in the position of saying make it 5,000 plus attorney fees.
Right.
So there are going to be people that want to push for the limits. I would think something like a 90-day safe harbor, where the understanding is, except in some egregious situation, we would like to get that stern letter that Commissioner Fritz referred to, saying, here's the law and you're put on notice, and then take out the additional penalty until we have some data on how we're doing.
But based on our experience with sick time, we're still getting questions in our office about Portland's law, the new law that's been in effect for quite some time now. And one thing that I would want to make sure is in the contract is the education piece, because we contracted with Boley to do the outreach to employers, and that actually took a long time to be able to just inform people, this is the rules, this is what you can do, with this what you can't, and to answer questions. So I would suggest that a similar 6 months of education and outreach would be the appropriate time frame.
So we want to take testimony if there is any, but based on this discussion, it might be good to continue this a little longer so that you have a chance to maybe prepare some amendments that reflect this discussion.
Certainly. I just wanted to say one or two things. The Boley enforcement and complaint procedures do envision exactly what you're talking about, Commissioner. You get a notice, you're asked to correct. It's worked into their administrative process, and it's far down the road before a penalty is given. But I just want to have some clarity from council, I guess without a vote yet, on where you would like to see this fall, a phase-in period around. I'm hearing from anywhere from 60 days to 6 months from Commissioner.
I would propose a 90-day period where, and it doesn't have to, I'm just one voice here, but it doesn't, for me, have to be an explicit safe harbor. I think just an understanding, something reflecting, saying, in the first 90 days, we want the emphasis to be on education, outreach, and remedial action. And then after the 90 days, we expect that they'll use the civil enforcement mechanism more expansively.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable.
So that people have at least a chance in the first 90 days to say, oops, I didn't know that, I'll cure it.
And what about the penalty, additional penalty? Are we at, if we're going to try to craft an amendment, are we thinking we want to keep that, lower it?
I'm reluctant. I understand your point, Commissioner Fisher. I'm reluctant to have no penalty associated with the city's ordinance. I understand it might not always be $5,000. It certainly shouldn't happen until all this education's happened. But again, should there be some penalty with respect to violation of the city's ordinance? I think so.
This is in addition to existing remedy. If, Mayor, if your intent is to continue this week,
yeah,
I would be happy to meet with council and just so I understand the full range of existing penalties and things, and then I'll have a recommendation.
Let's do that.
If I could ask for you to have Commissioner Novick's chief of staff involved in that discussion, since he was the one that wanted the increased penalty, that would be helpful.
All right, let's do that.
Thank you. Just one more item for consideration. While we didn't get a lot of public comments online, we did have some really great, robust conversations with our group, as well as with a couple of employment lawyers. One of the things that was mentioned for council consideration, the current matrix does not include attempted crimes, such as attempted murder. I didn't know if there was any appetite at the council level to include attempted offenses on our criminal history matrix, to have them be treated similar to the execution of the crime.
You mean if somebody is convicted of attempted murder?
Correct. Yes, sir.
Well, I think that should be fair game.
Okay.
That should be part of the background.
And one caveat, I guess, is for categories A and B, which are the sort of high crimes, and that include many of the crimes against children. For category C, and this is a policy call for the council to make, they are felony drug crimes, which do not include possession, but do include manufacture and sale. And my concern is that an attempt of those could be a misdemeanor, and then we'd be sort of down in the possession area. So that is a policy call.
Judy, can you tailor it so that we're talking about the attempted crimes that are very serious and not a way of, as you suggesting, backdooring a possession issue? I mean, I think we all understand that attempted murder, which means you've done everything but commit the murder, should be treated seriously. We're not interested, I think, in then having a mere possession of a drug that's now legal be treated as a disqualification.
So what I'm going to suggest is that on the convictions list, that be taken care of with categories A and B. We will include attempts, and then category C we can leave as is. Is that?
I think that's right.
Great. Thank you.
This is a very complicated subject, and I have to compliment both of you for your presentation and your work.
Thank you, sir.
It's been well done. Thank you both.
We'll be here if...
All right. We'll see if anyone wants to speak on this item.
Charles Johnson signed up.
Morning.
Good morning, commissioners. Sometimes you're over-diligent. I do believe that the hard work that these women and their coworkers have done was adequate, sometimes more than adequate compared to other things that have passed this council. But, you know, I think we should all be glad that I'm the only person here talking. There's nobody here from the Portland Business Alliance. No business lobby is overly concerned that this is going to destroy the Portland economy, because it's not. It's going to make the Portland economy better. People are having a harder time and have been unable to find work are going to have a greater chance of getting involved in the local economy. And we often berate you sometimes for the emergency ordinances, which is, of course, just a matter of semantics, the way things work here. But I would even encourage you that after you get the results you're looking for from the city's attorney's office, that this come back as an emergency, because I really think that if you had passed it today, that would actually help give certainty and clarity to the business community rather than having it go for an extra week of refinement. But whether you reconsider and actually just pass it today or stretch it for a week, it's a good package. The 27 pages of PDF are out there. Nobody's biting at that bait and coming in and complaining. So I look forward to you either passing it this week or as an emergency next week. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
For the record, Mr. Johnson, the Portland Business Alliance did send a letter of concern.
I'm shocked. So I'm not sure if a week is enough, but do you think so?
For, I think a week's
okay,
enough.
Then let's do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll definitely come into your offices and we'll get this back for next Wednesday.
All right, so I won't be here on next week, so that's another reason.
When is the effective date of this? When is the whole thing? When is the whole thing?
No, you won't. It's July 1st.
So Mayor,
next week I'll be here. Sorry, never mind. Wrong week.
You're here next week?
Yes, it's wrong week.
Yeah, and the effective date of this isn't until July 1st anyway. So
yeah, okay.
I think next week is reasonable.
Okay, yeah, and we do plan on, which is why we wanted to get it before council now, throughout the month of June, having some educational forums.
Sure, and next week's June 1.
We wanted a little bit of a...
If so then it goes into effect 30 days after we vote next week. It's a lower one.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much. I will continue this for a week. Just want to say, in reflecting on this work, there's some things that Portland has really been leading on in terms of progressive public policy. One of them is sick leave. This is another. And as it happens, I was at the White House yesterday at a meeting convened by...
Way to name drop.
Yeah, right. I was at the White House yesterday.
Just happened to be at the White House.
And Vice President Biden convened a meeting to talk about what do we do about gun violence in this country. And there were mayors and governors there. And there are things you can do in public policy, like what the Oregon legislature did last session, and that's good. And what you always find out in these discussions is that some states are ahead of us and some states are behind us. So, for example, Commissioner Saltzman, the thing you advocated for the hardest, the domestic violence restraining order policy, that was lauded along with the closing the background check loophole. That was lauded, but we still are pikers compared to Connecticut, where they banned assault weapons and large magazines at the state level. You get to compare notes. Secondly, there's good work being done in terms of community policing around the country, building relationships. But the strongest thing that we heard in that discussion, again, in terms of what other people are doing, because every city is dealing with an increase in gang violence. We have a particularly egregious increase in gang violence in our city. We had 15 people killed and 73 wounded last year in incidents of gang violence. This year, we're already at 58 incidents, one person killed, over 500 shots fired. So unfortunately, we're exceeding the pace of last year's gang activity. That kind of increase is happening around the country. But from mayor after mayor, from Mayor Freeman Wilson in Gary, from Mayor Hodges in Minneapolis, from Mayor Walsh in Boston, from Mayor Barrett in Milwaukee, there was this really strong theme that in all their gang outreach work, in all their effort to try to get around the front of this problem, instead of just having police work deal with gang incidents after the fact, everybody was on the same message, which is when you really talk to gang-affected young men and you ask them the question, what is the one thing that the community could do that would get you off this path? I said, without exception, every single conversation that they'd had in every single city was a job. If I had a good job, I would change my life. Period. It was that clear. And so when there's a huge percentage of our young people who have a criminal record because they've been involved in gangs once before, and every single community that's ever actually had a conversation with a gang member says, the thing you can do that will make a difference is make sure they can get a job, then that's why this is such an important piece of work. And that those conversations, I was really struck by that you know, hospital visits to try to get people to talk about who shot them are a good idea. Maybe it's not necessarily a police officer in those conversations. Might be a social worker. Might be somebody like the gang outreach workers that we just authorized additional positions for. Those things work. But the thing that you can do that will make the most difference is help them get a job. Pretty simple. So that's why this is important work, and I appreciate, Judy, you're passionate about this. You put a lot of work into it. Rachel, same to you. I appreciate the good work that you've done to cue this up as public policy, and I think this discussion at the council is very telling, which is if our employers get it, that this works and it makes a big difference in the community, I think that they'll be enthusiastic partners in getting this work done. So we will we'll continue this for a week. So that those discussions in council offices can happen and possible amendments will come back with the draft next week. Okay, that's done. Thank you.